Hey, Crawl.
Why are you talking like that?
Because the network is so slow.
Is that an IT joke?
You know, it's pretty irritating, isn't it?
Yes, you are.
No, I mean, it's irritating when the network's slow.
Yes.
And the thing is, it's not always actually the network's fault.
Okay.
Because it could be someone is hogging the bandwidth. Or it could be that some kind of security breach is happening.
Right, okay.
And data is being exfiltrated out of your organization. Yeah.
What people need is actual visibility, isn't it? You need to be able to see all this, like, you know, monitor it all and be able to see it happening.
Well, yeah, but isn't that going to cost you a lot of money? Aren't you going to have to get some specialist hardware and
No. Our friends at NetFort actually offer this great product called LandGuardian. It's unique and it's deep packet inspection technology that can be downloaded and deployed on a standard physical or virtual hardware, providing complete comprehensive visibility in minutes.
Oh, that sounds pretty neat. So you can find out what's really happening on your network.
Yes, in minutes. Plus, they are offering Smashing Security listeners a whopping, get this, 20% off any purchase.
Sorry, 20%?
Yes, 20%.
20?
20. A fifth. It's a lot.
It is a lot of money. And all people have to do is mention this podcast by name.
That's right. So, listeners, go to netfort.com and check it out for yourself. There's a free demo. There's a trial. And they are lovely people. I actually know them, and they're great guys.
You know what? They are lovely because they're actually sponsoring Smashing Security this week. So high five to them, and on with the show.
Smashing Security, Episode 10, The Dolls Must Be Destroyed, with Carol Terrio, Vanya Schweitzer, and Graham Cluley.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Smashing Security, episode 10 for Thursday, the 2nd of March, 2017. And it's a special transatlantic edition. Yes, we are really pushing things to the limit today because it's the first time, I think, actually, that we've all been in different countries, haven't we?
Yes.
Yep.
I'm currently in Canada, visiting the family.
Lovely.
I'm currently in Croton land.
The mysterious land of Croatia, and I'm in boring old Blighty today. And since we last issued a regular episode of Smashing Security, there have been some big stories which unfortunately didn't quite fit into our recording schedule, so we didn't cover them.
Yeah, which we obviously deliberately missed.
So in cryptography news, we had the first SHA-1 hash collision, and we had all that fuss about cloud bleed as well. Researcher Tavis Ormandy discovered that sometimes, quite rarely, but every now and then a tiny chance, Cloudflare or sites which were using Cloudflare would be sharing more information than maybe they should. And so private information could actually be contained. There's no evidence that anyone's been exploited by that. But I wanted to ask you guys, have you been changing your passwords as a consequence of this?
Of the cloud bleed, I think it's more concerns on the app provider side. But yes, I think if you find out that any of your apps you're using every day is using Cloudflare, which is very likely.
How would someone know if their software is using Cloudflare?
There are lists which have been posted up, I think, on GitHub. We'll link to it in the show notes, where you can download a long, long list of the many hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of sites which are using Cloudflare. Frankly, my decision was I'm not going to do anything. I think the chances, because this was only, it appears only a problem for a fairly short period of time.
Plus, it was discovered by Tavis Ormandy, which means that not many other people would actually discover this.
Yeah, quite possibly the case, yeah. We've spoken about Tavis and what a smarty pants he is in the past at finding bugs like this. No evidence that it's been exploited. And of course, in terms of passwords, it would only be if you're actually transmitting a password during one of those very rare sessions that this would potentially be an issue. But I just thought there are so many major websites who depend upon Cloudflare these days. It would just be, I think that's more of a hassle and potentially maybe even more of a risk, me changing all of those passwords, than thinking, actually, you know what? I'm not going to worry about it. So I'm not panicking about that particular one. I just thought it was, I put it in the too difficult box. Whether that will come back to bite me, I'm not sure.
I'm ignoring it for the moment as well.
Yeah.
I'm on holiday.
Nothing bad happens on holidays, as we know.
Do you know, I'm on holiday and I'm still here for this podcast. So
that's how dedicated you are.
That's a commitment.
Dedication.
That's unbelievable, Carole. That's fantastic. Wow. You do that.
Yes. Yes, it is. Amazing.
So despite being on holiday, you are joining us today for a regular episode where we're going to talk about some of the other stories which we've seen in the last week, which got our interest. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you, do you remember last year when VTech got hacked?
Mm-hmm.
They're the electronic learning toy company and
for
millions
kids.
Of families. Yeah, exactly. They're the things you sell to kids, like these sort of calculators and sort of things which help you learn how to spell and things like that. And I've got a young child, and so we might have one or two of their toys lurking around in here. Millions of families had their personal information exposed because of a serious security breach, which took place last year. Database access containing information about customers and their children. That was one failure of the Internet of Things when it came to toys. And earlier this month, a German privacy watchdog told parents to destroy an internet-enabled toy doll called My Friend Kayla.
I'm just picturing parents ripping heads off of toys.
Yes, of Kayla.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're getting your bow and arrow out and sort of harpooning these toys as they came lurching towards you like Chucky, the homicidal terror doll. Because My Friend Kayla could be used too easily to eavesdrop and even talk to children without knowledge or consent.
But is it basically made for parents to eavesdrop on their children? So the German privacy watchdog told children to destroy toy dolls so that parents cannot eavesdrop on them.
I think the concern was that maybe it could be done by others without permission as well. But, certainly concerns keep on coming up about these sort of IoT toys. And the latest one, which is raising concern, are some internet-connected stuffed animal toys called Cloud Pets from a company called Spiral Toys. And these are toys which allow people, children, family members to send voicemail messages to each other. Now, rather than me try and describe what these do, I should actually just play you chaps the advert. So I'm going to show you the YouTube video of this wonderful toy.
Do we really want to see that?
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Here it is.
So far. Now, staying in touch is easy and fun with Cloud Pets. Just record a message.
Hope you had a good day at school. I miss you.
And send to the cloud. In just seconds, it floats down to the app on your smart device, allowing you to send the message to the cloud pet.
Hope you had a good day at school. I miss you.
It's a message you can hug. Now, squeeze puppy's
night,
paw
Daddy,
to send one back.
You. Night, Daddy, I love you.
Cloud Pets makes you feel like the ones
Hi,
you love are always
grandma.
Near.
See you real soon.
The Cloud Pets app uses Bluetooth technology to send your messages.
Hi, this is Grandma. See you real soon.
Hi, Grandma. Hi, Grandma.
Whether you're all the way on the other side of the world.
I'll be home soon.
I miss you guys. I'll be home soon.
Oh, don't you want to go out and get one of those?
Oh, I can't stand the voice of the woman who's speaking in this ad.
Is that awful? She's so horribly happy.
No,
isn't
falsely,
she?
Falsely cheery False, to
yes,
the point
exactly.
where she's, you know.
She has this rictus-like smile. Hey, and there's also this, hey, Grandma, and hey, I'm out in the Gulf just sending a message to you kids.
They haven't spent too much money on this.
It is bizarre, isn't it? There isn't the greatest acting in the world. We'll put the link in the show notes if you want to see the video as well as listen to it. But the problem is this. Turns out Cloud Pets, oh dear, there's been a breach in Teddy Town because they have leaked their MongoDB database. We've talked about MongoDB mm-hmm. before and how people have poorly configured it. And as a consequence, potentially 2 million voice recordings of children and parents, email addresses, password data for more than 800,000 accounts have been exposed. Because when you use these toys to spread messages to each other, of course, those voice recordings go up into the cloud.
Can I ask that question? Why would you preserve all those recordings? Why wouldn't you, like a Snapchat, just expire them after some time?
Well, yeah, a very sensible thing to do. But obviously the people who are making these devices aren't thinking of security in mind, just like VTech weren't, just like the other devices that my friend Kayla, they aren't thinking about the potential privacy and security issues. And as a consequence, breaches like this keep on happening. And it's not just that anybody was able to access this database without a password, you know, no firewall, no passwords in place, you know, publicly accessible. But same old story, which we've talked about before with MongoDB databases and other database formats as well. The hackers gain access, they wipe the information, and then they begin to demand a ransom.
Do you know what? Vanya makes a really good point. I think they're keeping that information. Why wouldn't they delete it? And I think it's probably big data dreams, greedy big data dreams that they might be able to use that information for a later purpose or, and, you know, big data.
Kroll, I love your cynical question in mind, but when I see that video advert, I cannot believe that they've got two brain cells to rub together to actually conceive how other ways they can make money of it.
Yeah, I wonder how much resources they actually have. Like, is there just essentially this is just
an app? They seem to have enough data storage.
Oh, but data storage is quite cheap, right? I mean, even if it's millions of recordings.
Yeah, but we can't afford to encrypt it, though. Just, yeah.
Well, it's another thing to do.
Well, it's only $39.99.
Yes.
Yeah, if you want an encrypted voicemail service for your teddy bear, Carole, and your stuffed animal collection, I think you're going to have to spend upwards of $50, I'm afraid. Yeah, that's the kind of decision which consumers need to make.
Give me a big vat of molten lead and I'll take care of Cloud Pet's IoT teddy bear.
Well, once again, it looks like production data was being used on testing and staging servers, which, of course, is a cardinal sin too often.
They obviously haven't listened to our podcast.
No, they will.
Yep. Maybe we should send them an email.
Yes.
Send it over to them.
You know what? A number of people have been emailing them. In fact, this is half the problem, is that this problem was discovered and people kept telling them, saying, guys, your database, anyone can access it. And they didn't respond. Multiple occasions, people were getting in touch with them.
You're kidding
me. Nothing was happening. Even the blackmailers, different blackmailers kept on coming in, wiping the data and leaving different ransom demands. And the company, Cloud Pets, weren't paying, you know, Spiral Toys weren't paying any attention at all.
Do you know what this reminds me of? Do you remember that time we had a party in a hotel room in Vancouver? And we kept being called saying, get out of the room, stop the party. And we weren't really responding very well.
We were making a little bit too much noise.
And then they knocked on the door and we opened it and they had a bottle. They had champagne glasses and a bucket. And we thought, oh, someone ordered champagne. And it was just a ruse to get us all out.
Yeah, it was security, wasn't it? They came in pretending to give us champagne. They didn't even bring champagne. They just brought champagne glasses. That was enough to trick
us. That's right. And it was my room. And I was even kicked out of my own room for half an hour to cool down.
Serves you well.
Serves me right.
So you did have a lot of people from the anti-malware industry in your room, which, let's face it, isn't necessarily entirely healthy.
All the crazy party maniacs.
It will go down in history as quite a memorable party.
I think a good party. Maybe that's for another podcast. We'll go into the details on that. So, I mean, anyway, another disaster with the Internet of Things. I wanted to share some advice, which is if you do have one of these Cloud Pets, log in if you can, delete your account, make sure you're not using the same password anywhere else. One of the problems with, by the way, Cloud Pets was that even though they were storing passwords as a bcrypt hash, which is considered, you know, quite hard to crack, there was no password strength rules in place at all, as Troy Hunt reported. You could literally have a one character password of like A or X.
Wow.
That would be enough. And in the video where they describe setting a password, they just use a three character password as well. And,
well, it's for kids, so.
Yeah, poo.
They probably thought. Yeah.
And Troy discovered that there were plenty of people using passwords like 123456, Cloud Pets, Password, dumb things like that.
Yeah, and if you're very young, I was with my nephew who is 8 and he has this kind of cipher lock. So we set it all up for him and he went around to everyone and told everyone the password, 12345, skull.
There you are.
Skull.
Yeah, and he thinks it's a great password because he's 8.
So delete your account at Cloud Pets, change your password anywhere else on the net, and then take the toy, cover it in molten lead, as Carol said. Take out the batteries, chuck it in the bin. You know, that's the end of Cloud Pets, as far as I'm concerned. And vote with your wallet.
Make sure you have some ice cream or something on hand to deal with the tears that might ensue.
Oh, God, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
They'll be disappointed by this podcast. Give them some hope, guys.
Make sure that no kid finds the evidence of the destroyed pet.
Hey, Carol, do you remember when we had that squeaky doll of you?
Yes. It wasn't a blow-up doll or anything. I just want to make that clear to anyone listening.
I can't remember why you had it, but it was a very lifelike doll of you. It was like a Muppet, wasn't it?
Yes. It was a boss that bought it for me because she thought I spoke often and it had quite a large mouth. It was a puppet that you'd,
I think we'll leave it there and move on to Vanya's story of the week.
Good idea.
Yeah, my story is, it appeared last month, but this week it was updated with the latest news, and it concerns the latest insider's preview of Windows 10. Apparently a new version of Windows 10 called Creators Update, or whatever it's going to be called by April when it's supposed to be released, can run only applications from Windows Store, so-called UWP or Universal Windows Platform applications. So it seems that Microsoft may release a new version of Windows 10 called Windows 10 Cloud, which will compete with Chrome OS. So in the latest leak, this feature with Universal Windows Platform apps that can only be run is extended, and so you can also run other Windows applications that are installed from Windows Store. So these are not like your typical Windows 32 applications like we used to know. They have to be converted so they're compatible with the new user interface.
Okay.
And they work only for Windows 10. So it seems that the Microsoft is pushing for all the Windows developers to slowly cross to this new model, because if there are like quite a few advantages to developers. For example, if you create a UWP app, you can run the same app without any change on different devices, on your Xbox or on phone, on tablets or whatsoever.
Yeah.
There are some kind of rumors that also Android and iOS apps will be able to run on those platforms. So it's quite an interesting move from Microsoft. But what concerns us, of course, is the, like, what does it bring from the security point of view?
Right.
So, there are a lot of the advantages of this, the new format. And, one of the advantages is that the app, when you install it, it cannot chain install other applications. So you can't have like Adware included. Today, when you download the desktop application, often you get many other applications installed without you knowing. So that's one of the security benefits of this. The second one is an obvious Apple-like control and vetting of applications by Microsoft.
The walled garden sort of effect.
The walled garden, but this time walled garden of Microsoft rather than Apple. It seems, and like these apps, they have no access to the Windows file system, to the operating system or the registry. And so they are very much isolated one from each other. And you really, it's much more difficult for malicious app to appear.
I would certainly think you probably would still need antivirus software because, of course, not all malware infections come from apps. For instance, you would get malware inside Word documents and macro malware and scripting malware and things like that, which wouldn't be programs which you would download from this store or anywhere else on the net. But, you know,
interesting. But if let's say Office or a browser is a UWP app or a new platform, universal app, it doesn't have access to other apps or any other files that would actually, you know, be required for any kind of malicious behavior.
Okay, let's back up for a second for me. So you're saying, so if I'm using Windows 10, I'm on the internet, I want to download some app that's not within their walled garden. What are you saying will happen?
Well, you have basically three options in the new release that's about to be, you know, released to the public in April. You can either say, well, I only want applications that are from Windows Store.
Yep.
That's the first one. And no other apps will be run. Your second option is to say, warn me if any applications that's not from Windows Store wants to be installed. mm-hmm. or it's trying to be installed. So you have this sort of similar as today. You have the user account control where you say, well, okay, you know, I pretty much know what this is, so I will allow it to run. Yep. And the third one, which basically is the same as more or less as today, you don't have any kind of warning, so you are free to install any kind of app. So it's going to be interesting to see how Microsoft will push this feature forwards.
So, of course, Apple has kind of gone through this process already with the Mac App Store, where you get apps which have been vetted by Apple and they have tight control over what those apps can do. A lot of low-level stuff the apps aren't allowed to do.
Including AV, of course.
Including antivirus, of course. But there has been resistance from that, from some of the developers. One of the issues has been, of course, that Apple, and I don't know what Microsoft is planning to do with this, but Apple takes a chunk of the change. So they will take some of the money for the cost of your apps. They will earn that as commission. And that's one of the way in which they rake in money, just like they do with the iOS App Store.
I would be very surprised if Microsoft wouldn't do the same.
Yeah.
Mm. Because they kind of try to advertise it as it provides additional services apart from security. Actually, automated updating is included and your user management through this right. central store.
But more than that, there are other restrictions as well. Suddenly, some of the apps which I run on the Macs, which I own, I have a choice of either buying them from the App Store or buying them directly from the developer. And quite often, you will find there are additional features in the version which is available from the developer because they weren't able to get it past the App Store guidelines.
Okay, but,
they were doing.
But
things.
You're quite an advanced user, Graham, right?
But some of these tools, Carol, aren't doing things which appear advanced to me as a user. It just works, you know. It's doing what I require. It's not like I'm trying to do something nerdy on my computer, but the versions in the App Store, it's just like, oh, sorry, we can't do that because of Apple's restrictions.
Well, there are certainly restrictions in Microsoft yeah. as well.
But here's my other concern is I do hear from Apple Mac developers that there can be quite a lag between sending an app to Apple for approval.
And it being available.
And it ending up in the App Store. So if there is a vulnerability, if there's a flaw, if there's an urgent bug fix, quite often you will get that bug fix much quicker if you've got the software directly from the developer. And that would make me nervous about these Microsoft
okay,
programs
but,
as well.
But for users that are not as au fait with technology, I always recommend using the app stores. I get the drawbacks, but I prefer to have that extra sense of this app has been vetted before I would get my Auntie Hilda, for example, to go and download something.
Yeah, so basically Windows is moving closer to iOS and Android in the model. So which for me again begs the question, like, why we use Windows?
Yeah.
And Mac OS, right? I mean, there was like, for me, like a comparative advantage of Windows was that it was open to developers, yes. that you can actually use some of the system stuff, that you can have drivers and so on. There are obviously security drawbacks to that, but, you know, as a very powerful system, I don't know. It worked in the past. It's going to be interesting to see how the users and how the developers will react to this.
It's an interesting trend, and only time will tell where we end up and how much further along this slope we go. Well, thanks for telling us about that, Vanya. Carol, what have you got?
So my story is about personal identifiable information, or PII, and how easy it is for someone to unintentionally cause a massive security headache inside a corporation. So let me set the scene for you guys. So November 21st last year, a Boeing employee sent a work spreadsheet to his wife, who does not work at Boeing, to get help with a formatting issue. The employee's wife, it seems, was a bit of a whiz at the old Excel spreadsheet stuff. I bet you it was a pivot table, don't you? It's totally a pivot table.
That's a dark art pivot table.
A hidden column.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? Wait on that. So that's exactly. So the problem, the spreadsheet held personal info of 36,000 employees. These days, with all the breaches we hear, that's not a huge number, but that's employees. Now, the information that was in the spreadsheet, okay, that the employee could see was first and last names, place of birth, their ID, employee ID, and accounting department codes. But there were hidden columns, Vanya, exactly as you said. Social security numbers and date of birth were in the hidden columns.
They were super securely stored and hidden.
Just hidden. Yeah, I know. See, it's interesting, that whole idea. Anyway, so I couldn't find any information on how Boeing actually became aware of the infringement, because I imagine the employee sent this to his wife. His wife fixed whatever issue was going on, sent it back. Everyone's happy. No one's the wiser. But I suspect there are probably some...
The wife reported him.
Maybe. But I suspect probably it was probably more deep packet inspection software, something similar that raised the alarm. So... looking at this, I was thinking, actually, I think Boeing seems to have done everything right. And I'll just walk through these and you tell me if they've missed anything, because you guys know this stuff a little bit better than I do. So Boeing obviously had the tools in place to uncover the unintended infraction, right? It was able to kind of find out what happened if my assumption's correct.
Yep.
Boeing also seems to have gotten to the bottom of the problem and has not publicly named and shamed the employee publicly from anywhere I've seen.
He's still employed.
We don't know. There's no.
You can imagine he would be quite scapegoated. You know,
yeah.
There wouldn't be any good to come from naming him, really.
We have seen companies do that, though. We have seen companies name the employees that have caused problems. So I'm a big fan of not doing that. Now, yeah. Boeing have also performed a forensic analysis both on the employee's computer and the wife's computer to ensure that all the information is properly destroyed. And they have confirmation from the couple that neither forwarded the information to anyone else. Mm-hmm. The company, now this is pretty standard these days, but the company is also offering employees 2 years access to free identity theft protection services. I'm not sure why it's just 2 years. I'm not sure why that isn't just a standard across for any employee that works at a company. Why wouldn't you just offer this part of the package?
Sorry, this was sent by email. So there must be like an email server as well that was used by the
Exactly. Has it turned up in her webmail account or something like that? And did anyone else have access to that? Was that being properly secured?
Yeah.
Do they know if someone else accessed that account?
These are all good questions that I don't have the answers to yet. But if we find out, I'll update on the next podcast if anything else comes out of this. So now, of course, now that this has all gone through, the Boeing is now, Deputy Chief Privacy Officer Marie Olson is in the process of officially informing the attorney generals of each of the affected states about the infringement, which is by law, I think 47 states, if I remember correctly, now require by law that you declare, if people, if their information has been leaked in that way. But the thing is you can see how easy this happened. And it reminded me of this time when I remember trying to send an email to a colleague whose name was Eve. Can you guess what happened? It auto-corrected to everybody. Okay. And that's not just everybody that was in the particular building I was working. That was everyone in the organization globally.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And so
don't you just love the Gmail feature of undoing the send for those, like when it waits for like 10 seconds or few seconds before it actually sends it?
Do you know what I did though? I yanked the cord out of the back of my computer when I realized that was my emergency automatic response, although I was too late and everyone received it. Now, all I can say is thank God I didn't write anything in there that impacted privacy or confidentiality. These things can happen, and I think they can happen to anyone.
Absolutely.
Oh, totally can. So, I mean, a lesson to learn here is don't employ anyone called Eve. Don't employ anyone called Al.
Eve or Bud.
But do you know, I got changed. When that happened, I actually wrote to the CIO and said, look, we need to have this mechanism in place to say, are you sure you want to email everybody in the company? And they actually implemented it. So these kind of things can help to go, oh, no, I just wanted to email Eve.
Although that one wouldn't have helped with this particular breach, because he was intentionally sending it to his wife because she was an Excel whiz.
You know what? Boeing should hire her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, clearly the employees need some training about how to handle properly personal information, but maybe they also need some training on how to use Excel.
I didn't mention that. They are going to offer extra training as well, they've said. They're going to offer extra training on how to deal with. But again, if the employee didn't know that there was PII in there because it was in hidden columns.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you really shouldn't send any work related documents to anybody outside of the,
hand on heart. Hand on heart, Vanya. Who has not done that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I know that most of the people did, and most of the people would use Gmail for something that, just quickly to send because I'm not able to connect to the company system at the moment.
The thing which gets me was this wasn't an accidental data leak. I mean, he didn't know the data was there, or maybe he didn't realize the seriousness of the data which was contained, because some of it was hidden. but it was an intentional sending of it. So I was thinking, oh, how would I fix this? And the story you've just told, Carol, of yanking out the cable, I have a similar problem, right? I send an email, I hit send, and only then do I go, ooh, I shouldn't have said that. So I actually have a system in place with my email client where it goes into limbo for about 90 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it goes into that limbo folder before it really sends it.
The Graham's own walled garden.
My own little walled garden. And every day I'm going into that limbo box before it gets sent and quickly editing things, maybe to make myself sound a little bit friendlier and less blunt, or, you know, thinking maybe that joke was a little bit off color.
Yeah. You told me about that about a year ago, and I think that's a lifesaver. It's a great feature.
It really is. But it wouldn't have helped with this. It sounds like, you know, I think you're right to give Boeing some credit here. Not only have they handled this properly, but it sounds like they had the tools in place to actually notice that the sensitive information had leaked out of the company. So, I mean, you know, kudos to them for
there must be some DLP functionality there.
Yeah, and it kind of builds a bit of trust in the company that they've kind of done this in this way. Like they've followed the rules, they've been open about it, and I think, you know, rather than hiding everything under the carpet and hoping no one finds out, it kind of makes me think, okay, good on you, Boeing.
Yeah, considering that they're like a huge manufacturer of military weapons, I mean, military airplanes, as well as the public, the standard ones.
And some of this information would have been valuable, you know?
Absolutely.
Social security numbers,
date of birth. This is the kind of information about employees. And it was, do you say 36,000 workers were included in this?
Yep.
That's right. So that would have definitely been valuable to some of the criminals at the moment who are targeting big firms like Boeing through things like CEO fraud, business email compromise. Potentially, it could have been bad.
Criminals and nation states, too, because it's a very kind of important company.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So put yourself in the situation. If you're in the company and you get the email from, you know, from the CIO saying, look, this happened. Do you think you would, how concerned would you be about your information in this case if you were an employee at Boeing?
I wouldn't feel too bothered.
Me neither.
Because it's a guy sending it to his wife, and presumably they get on, and presumably she isn't a Russian spy.
And they've all been forensically checked. The machines have.
Yeah.
They've made official statements. So I'd feel pretty
reassured, and I'd actually feel comforted by the notification, because I think, hey, you know, they're looking for this kind of thing, and maybe it'd also make me an awful lot more careful
about what you send. It might make you careful about what you send. You may not even be aware that all this this software is available, but you know, they can, when you're on a work computer, it is, you know, you are, it is theirs. So be careful what you send.
Well, yeah. Imagine what else we are emailing our wives and partners, you know, from our work email accounts, which maybe the company could be seeing. Something for us all to think about, right? Oh, thanks for that, Carol. So we move on to the section of the other show, which I've put in our little template here as any other business.
Well,
cue the sad music. We have an announcement.
Who's making the announcement?
I think you should, Van.
Oh, right.
No, you don't want to? Do you not want to?
Well, I'll make it all right. So I'm very sad to say that I will be taking a break from the Smashing Security podcast because I'm changing the employer and I have to make sure that employer is happy with whatever I do. I'm hoping to come back, certainly, but for the moment, it's going to be a break.
Can I ask anyone out there who are fans of Vanya to write it and say how great and smart and wonderful? He's basically the one who props us up in terms of technicality. We need him. So,
except when I make mistakes.
Like last week.
Should we crowdfund it? Should we crowdfund Vanya to stay on the podcast?
No, what we should do is we should give everybody the email address of his new boss and say, contact this person. Here's the phone number. And say, I can't believe Vanya isn't on the Smashing Security podcast
anymore. He's such a help. Well,
Vanya,
we're going to miss you.
We are going to miss you, man. You know, it's the end of the Three Musketeers.
Maybe we can call him up occasionally at work and go, is this true? During the podcast, live on air.
Yeah, I'll have to speak to my PR people.
Oh, PR.
Well, Vanya, it's been tremendous, but I like to think this isn't goodbye.
No.
It's just too, we'll miss you for a few episodes, but
We'll see you anon.
And our adventures will continue, folks. And the way to make sure that you don't miss out on our future podcast adventures is, of course, to subscribe to the podcast. We are on iTunes and Google Play Music, Stitcher on Android, and all kinds of other podcast apps as well. Go and look for Smashing Security there and leave a review and say something nice about us. We really appreciate it if you do. It makes a big, big difference. That just about wraps it up. Thanks for tuning in. And I think I should leave the final words to Vanya Schweitzer. Actually, Vanya, do you want to do the big wind-up at the end of the episode, seeing as you may not be here for a little bit longer?
Well, what can I say? I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and please do continue following Graham and Carol as they cover all the latest security news. I hope to be back soon.
Bye-bye. Five stars.
Oh, sorry.
Vanya. Vanya, it's not just about you, Vanya. Can you plug the Twitter account, for goodness sake?
We have a Twitter account, at Smashing Security. That's smashing without a G, security. Bye-bye.
So unprofessional. I'm glad he's off, to be honest.
Maybe we could get him to record the wrap-up and the intro so we could still have him a little bit with us.
Do you think you'd be allowed to do that?
Probably not.
No.
Yeah, well, what?
Hey, Graham, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Vanya's gone, though.
Oh, he's dead to me.
Yeah.
But NetFort is not. Just reminding our listeners, there's 20% off NetFort LandGuardian for listeners of Smashing Security. Check it out at netfort.com. That's NETFORT.
Thanks, NetFort.
You guys rock.